Welcome to Gleaning and Gathering. I'm your host, Eric Heimlich, and today I want to talk to you about leadership challenges from the trenches. I was listening to a podcast last week with Todd Bolsinger and Carrie Nyhoff on the Carrie Nyhoff Leadership Podcast. It was a good one. I encourage you to listen to it. Todd Bolsinger's book on canoeing the mountains, I think it came out in 2015, has a story in it about Sacagawea and Lewis and Clark's expedition. The leaders of that day had basically a concept of geography that included some sort of water passage from the Pacific through to the Atlantic, or at least through to the Mississippi River. That's what they thought. And so as they were heading west, that's what they were in search of, at least one of the things that they were in search of. And so they came to the pass between what is today modern day Montana and Idaho, and saw the Rocky Mountains for the first time. You know, they had been hearing about these mountains, but they thought mountains like, you know, Virginia mountains, like Blue Ridge Mountains. They suddenly saw that everything that they had assumed was wrong. And now they had to come up with a plan to be able to get through this and continue on. He was using that as a metaphor for leadership and challenges that leaders face, particularly in times of crisis or in transition. And as a church, we need to recognize that we don't know everything. You know, we need to live and learn to listen to voices that we haven't valued before, because the road forward will not look anything like the road behind us, Bolsinger points out. And it's true. You know, if you would have in 2019 said to leaders, what do you think are going to be the biggest challenges we're going to face in 2020? Probably none of them could have anticipated the full range of challenges that we would face with COVID-19, with lockdowns, with all the political and social issues that developed. And so one of the things that we're not doing is we're not training leaders to lead crisis well. And a lot of life ends up being crisis. You know, we think about things as they have been and assume that going forward, it's going to be very similar. And so we try to plan based on past performance, what did happen, and the road forward probably is going to be something like that. But the reality is that you know, we're constantly facing these situations, especially when we're approaching uncharted territory like Lewis and Clark. And so one of the most important things that we can do as a leader is to build trust. You know, he makes this point. He said, people are not going to trust you off the map until they've learned to trust you on the map. And by learning to trust you on the map, he means that there's those things that they can see. Do you tell the truth? Are you the kind of leader that is emotionally present, that is someone who actually cares about his people? What kinds of things are you communicating daily that can be seen, that can be known, that can be quantified? If they can't trust you in those things, then they sure as the world aren't going to trust you when you reach this point where the road forward is completely uncharted, we've never been here before, and they look at you and say, Pastor, what are we going to do now? Have we built the trust at that point that people are going to trust us off the map when there is no clear path forward and we're having to make this up as we go along and just try to figure it out? It's really important that we have built the trust on the map so that people will trust us when we are off the map. Another point that he makes, and this is something I've been chewing on this week, he said one of the most important things that a leader can do is to prepare for the sabotage of his own people. I've been thinking about that. You know, you see it in the Bible with Moses. They come through the Red Sea. There's just this wonderful time of rejoicing. And then it's not very long before the whole crying group is saying, why did you bring us out here to kill us? At least in Egypt, we had food to eat. And they're whining and complaining and saying, you know, this was a terrible idea. Why did you get us into this? And Moses prays. God gives them water from a rock. He gives them food from heaven. He gives them, and God takes care of them all the way. God provides for it. But again and again, you see the children of Israel, the very people who should have been grateful, helpful, thankful. What are they? No, they're trying to sabotage the whole thing by saying, this is a bad idea. I thought it was a bad idea to begin with. Let's go back. You know, as leaders, we are formed in leading. It's a little bit like being a parent. You know, I always thought it was just amazing that God trusted little babies to 19 and 20 year olds. You know, youth is so wasted on the young. And if I could raise kids now with the wisdom that I have over 20 plus years of parenting, and I had that when I started, wow, wouldn't that be amazing? And yet, that's not what we get. Instead, the great thing about having kids when you're young is that you get to grow up together, I've always said. And so leaders are formed in leading. They become leaders while leading. And so we're constantly leading people through transformation. And transformation includes loss. You know, as Lewis and Clark approached these mountains, they had to let go of the canoes. You can't go climbing mountains carrying canoes. And so there's a sense of resistance that people have, not just to change. Many people may not like change, but the thing that they're resisting more than change is loss. Anytime you go through a transformation, it means there's going to be loss. You can't get there and hold on to here. If you leave Egypt headed for the promised land, you're giving up the leeks and the garlics and all the other good stuff, quote unquote, the good old days. Why can't we have the good old days? Well, because if we're going to move to a bright new future, we can't continue with where we've been. You know, last night I attended a college community grant celebration at Taylor University. Taylor has just secured a $30 million grant from the Lilly Endowment to do community development work in and around Upland and this northeastern part of Indiana. And President Lindsay was outlining all the different things that they were going to do. There's about $250 million of investment that's going to be happening in the community and surrounding area over the next 5 years. That is a heap of a lot of investment. And as somebody who has grown up here, who has lived here, there's seven generations of Heimlichs that are have been part of this place. It's a place with deep, deep roots for me. The idea of $250 million of investment in this little place scares me to death. And the reason it scares me is that we are going to lose the upland that I have always known. You know, one of the leaders in talking about this before we received the grant here, and I say we as a community, he was talking about upland and said, you know, when he first came to upland and drove down Main Street, that his wife cried. And the crowd that he was talking to just kind of laughed at that. I didn't laugh. I didn't think it was funny. And the reason I didn't laugh and I didn't think it was funny is that this newcomer, this latecomer to our community, is laughing at and disrespecting our community that I love very much. These are buildings that have been there since my grandfather was a little boy, that you're talking about being vacant or not very nice, and these are things you want to tear down. And frankly, I take issue with some of that. Again, is some of this going to be good? It absolutely will be. And does our community need to move to the next level? It does. But transformation means loss. And so I'm not just resisting change, but I am resisting loss. And I know that there's going to be some loss here. And I hope that the people that are leading this change actually care for this place in a way that this change is going to be helpful and that will respect the history that's been here, the culture that's been here, that they've come to enjoy, because it didn't just happen by chance. There have been a lot of people who have stayed here, and because of the decisions that they have made, it is a beautiful place. It's a beautiful place that when you move here from wherever else, you realize that this is something special. There's a low cost of living. There's a almost non-existent crime rate. I mean, it's the kind of place that people love to live in and raise a family in. And so changing all of that without understanding it and without appreciating it fully scares me to death. When I think about $250 million of investment in this little place, that's a heap of lot of investment. And there's some great things that can happen. And then there's some really scary things that can happen. Some unintended consequences and land values and home values going up to the point that longtime residents here are priced out and their property taxes go through the roof and they can no longer afford it. I saw it happen in Indianapolis. There was all kinds of investment on the Near East Side of Indianapolis after 2008, when the Super Bowl came to town. There was a legacy project that was a part of that. And that legacy project was an investment in the Near East Side and the quality of life plan that myself and other neighbors had put together. Great plan and great investment. But now Jack Henderson's property tax bill quadrupled in a single year. Jack's been here for over 50 years, but as a older man on a fixed income living there on Keystone, he is facing some really hard challenges. And he's not getting any of this wonderful new investment in his property. Properties around him are going up in value, which then is causing his to go up in value. But he's not seeing any good from that. All he's seeing is a property tax bill that just quadrupled. And I guess that's what I'm talking about when I'm talking about unintended consequences. And a lot of times, you know, you really can't make a good case for maintaining $15,000 crack houses instead of turning them into, you know, $250,000 high-end housing options. I mean, I'm not saying that they need to stay crack houses. That's not a good thing. And yet, how do we have, as Bob Lupton would say, gentrification with justice? How do we do this in a way that doesn't alienate and eliminate even neighbors who have been here for years who now can no longer live in this neighborhood because they can't afford to? And so they're pushed out when they've been here through thick and thin, and now all the nice new people that want to move in here now have more money and have more resources, and so they're no longer welcome. That's just not fair. It's not right. It's not good. So I think that there's a need for balance in all of these things, but it gave me an up-close personal view of this whole idea of transformation includes loss. And right now, I'm hopeful. I'm cautiously optimistic, but there's a great gulf between the folks at Taylor and the folks who've lived here a long time. And I love the community, and I love Taylor. I love them both. And I hope that they'll learn to love each other and to listen to each other. I think that, you know, when we begin to get into crisis, when we begin to deal with challenge, with change, if we're not careful, we can lose our core purpose and our integrity in face of change as leaders. It's just, we default to the expedient. What do we have to do? What do we need to do? And I think that when we lose that, we lose our heart. And in order to keep from losing our heart, we as leaders need really three groups of people. First one is partners. We need partners. We need people who will be with us in the fight and people that will have an understanding of the issues and will be with us in it. The second thing we need is friends. As I've talked to leaders, one of the things that amazes me is how few of them have real friends. Now, many of them have deal friends, but not real friends. And so their friends, their friend group is really based on networking. Yeah, these people go to my church, and so they're my friends. And they may be their friends, but will they still be their friends if they're no longer the pastor of that church? Are they still going to be hanging out with them and spending time with them when they're 65 years old? Are these going to be the people that are going to be gathered around their deathbed? Maybe, but probably not. It's amazing to me how few friends many leaders have. And because they feel like it's lonely at the top, I don't have any friends, there's a real challenge there. And the third group is mentors. Who's pouring into your life in a way that is helpful? I have been so grateful for many different mentors along the way that I've had. But more recently, God has given me a mentor. I don't know how many years I'll have with him. His name is Pastor Paul. And he's originally from Australia. He's just an amazing guy. But at 86 years of age, he has 40 years more perspective on life than I have. And as we meet weekly and sit down and talk about life and what's going on in the moment and what's going on in the world, and then what's going on in my heart, as a pastor of over 40 years, he has a perspective and he has wisdom and he has stories that I am coming to appreciate more and more. He lost his wife about 6 years ago and now lives alone. And one of the last things he said to me when we met last was, "Treasure your wife, mate." His words to me have been so life-giving. And when I leave our meetings, I just feel uplifted. So I want to encourage you. I don't know where you're at with all that, but I want you to evaluate as leaders. Do you have partners? Do you have friends? Do you have mentors? Because if you're not maintaining your own ability to lead, what's going to happen is you're going to experience crisis. It's just a matter of time before you will. And if you're not careful, in the middle of that, you can lose your core purpose. Why in the world am I doing this to begin with? And lose your integrity in the face of change. And just default to whatever is expedient, whatever it is that you feel like you've got to do. I also want to encourage you to find rhythms of leading and not leading. Don't always be the person who's up front in every context of your life. You need to have some place where you're just sitting in the pew, so to speak, and just listening. You need to be in some group that you're not the head of and that you gain nothing from in your professional organizational world. You need places where you're not getting resistance. You need to do stuff that you enjoy, that you're good at, have a hobby, do something for fun. I really think that learning that skill is going to go a long way toward making you a resilient leader. One of the guys that I have just so admired over the years is Brother Barry Arnold. He pastored Lebanon God's Missionary Church for a number of years. But I really think that one of the reasons why he was able to do that is he had a little hobby of farming. And he could come home from the pressures of a church that was fairly large, of which he was the pastor, and running here and running there and taking care of the people there was quite a task. But he had the ability to be able to change clothes and head out to the field and do some good old-fashioned hard manual labor. And having known him in his later years, I think that was one of the keys to his being able to maintain in ministry for as long as he was. He had something in his life there that he was able to take the pressure off, and he wasn't in a space where he had to push in the same sort of way. And for me, a lot of the work that I've been able to do here at Victory Acres has been the same sort of thing. It's been life-giving. And yes, there are challenges, and anytime you're dealing with people, there are problems. But then there have been the other challenges and problems that don't include that. They've been incredibly life-giving. It's so much, I won't just say fun, because that's not the right word. It's so refreshing to come out in an early morning with the dew still on the ground and pull a few weeds in a garden and get your heart rate up, or to walk in an early morning and see the deer that are feeding in the fields. There's something incredibly calming about that. And that no matter what may be happening at the end of the day, to be able to walk the long lane up to the farmhouse hand in hand with my wife and to be able to take in this beautiful place is something that feeds my heart. And so I want to encourage you as a leader to have something in your life that's enjoyable, that you're good at, that you're just refreshed by, even if it's work. It's good work. Because if you're not getting that tank refilled, you're going to get into a place where you're leading on empty, and bad things happen when you do that. I think that leadership in the future is going to be more and more collaborative. And so I want to encourage you to reach out and build connections with people that may or may not be from your particular industry, your group. I'm a big believer in serendipity. And I don't think we always know the way in which those sorts of relationships that we build are going to connect to the work that we're doing. And I don't think we necessarily need to know. I think that it's enough just to build friendship for friendship's sake. But I think that increasingly there are going to be these points of connection that are going to emerge, and that leadership as we move forward is going to be more collaborative. You know, one of the things that I'm very thankful for is that early on in our ministry that God gave me leadership to walk alongside of. And in Indianapolis for several years, Brother John Whiteman was co-pastor with me at Victory Chapel. And we didn't do the whole, you know, senior pastor, associate pastor, youth pastor, dog pastor kind of thing. There's no hierarchy. We're all brothers together, and we worked together, we led together. He was co-pastor, which meant that if I was out of town and there was a funeral, I wasn't flying back to go take care of a funeral, because I'm the senior pastor and no one can be taken care of if Eric is not in town. He took care of it. He dealt with those issues, which meant that I could be fully present when I was not there. Other times when he was gone and I'm fully present, the same thing happened. And so there were lots of those sorts of things, because we were co-pastoring, that it was a huge blessing. But also in relation to that, there were different giftings. And so he was more of a pastor teacher. And so many times he would take the Sunday night slot and have these teaching sessions, incredibly valuable. And as someone that sat under his ministry and was taught by him, I appreciated so much of what he shared, and our people gleaned so much from it. And for me, I was a different style preacher. I think Brother Roland Mitchell one time said, every time I've heard you speak, really, there's only one message, and that is, what are you doing? I thought that was good. What are you doing? You know, like this challenge was a way that pretty much came through in one way or another all the time as we endeavored to try to share and apply the scripture. But having that difference in personality, in style, in emphasis, meant that people were getting a more balanced diet than they would have if they would have just had messages from Eric on what are you doing every single time. And so I think that, you know, the opportunity to be able to develop new leaders, to be able to develop leaders in different ways is much greater if we're collaborating in leadership and working together with others in a non-hierarchical sort of way. You know, at the end of the day, is somebody going to be in charge? Sure, of course. But it doesn't necessarily have to be a title that is automatically defaulted to every time. And so there are things that one leader's good at in one situation and another leader's good at it, and another. And so having that team approach, I think, makes for a much healthier, longer term sort of situation. Anyway, for whatever it's worth, I think that there's a lot of things on the horizon that are completely and totally off the map. And I don't know what the future is going to look like, but the road forward will not look anything like the road behind us. I'm confident of that. And so I don't know where you're at, but I want you to take stock of where you are right now as a leader and see how much is really in the gas tank. And what am I doing to fill my heart, to grow my mind, to develop as a leader in this area that I'm leading in? You know, as someone else said, we either change, innovate, improve, or die. Those are the options. Change, innovate, improve, or die. And as a leader, we all have seen the statistics along the way. The people that haven't made it. The people that have crashed and burned. And you don't have to be one of those. With God's help, there can be bright days ahead. And so I want to encourage you to do what you need to do to feed your heart and to develop as a leader by having partners and having friends and having mentors. They're going to be able to help you go the distance. For Gleaning and Gathering, God bless.